Good Monday morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. We have a lot to get to this morning, but we cannot ignore what an incredibly difficult weekend it has been for the entire country. I think we're all looking for a way this morning to express what we're feeling and what we're thinking. I personally spent the last couple of days trying to explain to my two young daughters what was happening and why. And it was hard. So this morning, before we begin the show, a few moments to try and process what we are facing and how sports ties into it. Joining me, as always, Nick Wright, Kevin Wildes, and Brian Westbrook is with us. And Brian, I'm going to start with you. What has been your reaction to what's been going on across this country?
Well, Jenna, like you and probably a lot of people across the country, I've spent these last few days obviously watching what's going on in Minnesota, what's going on with the George Floyd situation over the past weekend, the protests, the rioting, and the looting. And the only thing that continues to pop into my head is, how did we get here again? How did we get to this place where we're at once again? And I was able to run into my parents yesterday. And my mother was here in D.C. in 68 when Dr. King was assassinated, and they had riots and, you know, marching and protests and looting. And the biggest question that she said yesterday was, how do we get here again? 52 years later, we're still dealing with a lot of the same things, where we have some peaceful protests, but then we have a lot of people taking advantage of the situation and rioting and looting and tearing up the stores that we all frequent, that we play, we put our money in, that we spend time and money in. And that's scary. How do we get here again 52 years later? You know, as a parent of three little black kids, we teach them a few things. One, you treat everybody right. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter your skin color. It doesn't matter your class. It doesn't matter your clothes. You treat everybody right. Number two, you know, you do the right thing. And if you see something wrong, you say something. And the last thing, and probably just as important in what's going on here, is that if I'm not around, your parents and friends are not around, your family's not around, you run to your police. They're your civil servants. They're there to protect and serve you. And just imagine, as I sit down and try to explain to my three little black children what's going on this weekend, the question that they've given to me. They've asked, well, you know, if we see something, we're supposed to say something. Why was it that three white officers or three officers were standing around watching as George Floyd was murdered in the streets? Why is that true, Dad? Why is it true that if we're supposed to run to the police in the time of need, that the police officer, Derek Chauvin, was kneeling on George Floyd for nearly 10 minutes in the streets? Why? How do those things align? And truthfully, I honestly don't have any answers for them. I have to tell them that there are some good people in the world and there are some bad people. Some of the good people in the world are like the officers in Miami, that they greeted the protesters this past weekend on a knee just to show solidarity with them, that they feel the same pain that we feel. Like the sheriff in Flint, Michigan, Chris Swanson, that said, you know, I'm going to put my baton down. I'm going to take my helmet off, and I'm going to walk with you, the protesters. Some of the brothers like LeBron James and Steph Curry, Jaylen Brown, who drove 15 miles to Atlanta to join the protesters. We need that. That's important. There are good people in this world. Then there are other brothers that don't look like me, like Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz and Joe Burrow, that have come out and said, listen, we haven't been through some of the experiences that you guys have been through. However, we're here for you. It just reminds me of when Chris Long put his hand down on Malcolm Jenkins' shoulder as he knelt in silent protest of the flag years ago. He was saying, brother, I haven't been through some of the same things that you have been through, but I'm here with you. And that's meaningful. That's what we need for the change. That's going to help us not to get to the place we're at here again in the future. Nick, as I wrap up here, I just have to ask, where would we be at as a country if our country clamored for the end of racism, the end of police brutality, the same way we're clamoring for the return of hockey and football and baseball and basketball? We all want it back after a couple months of the quarantine. Just imagine the end of police brutality and racism after many, many years of those things going on, if we all clamor for the end of those things the way that we're clamoring for our sports to return, we won't be here again in any time in the near future.
Well, Brian, thank you for sharing that part with your family, with us. And the question you asked, unfortunately, would appear for many, many of our fellow Americans, they are much more bothered by the lack of sports than the presence of racism or the presence of police brutality. But before I get into my thoughts in full on this, Stephen Jackson is a friend of this show, but longer than he's been a friend of this show, he has been a good friend of Kevin Wilde's. He's known us longer. He's known Stephen longer than any of us have. And obviously, Stephen's very close to this story, knowing George Floyd so well. So, Kevin, I want to kick it to you before I give my thoughts.
Sure. Well, thank you, Brian, and thank you, Nick. I thought, as I looked at the events of this weekend and last week, I thought America is lucky to have Stephen Jackson. And in his call for justice and change, he's been blunt and nuanced and strong and sincere and passionate and profound. And he's been a beacon for the country and world while also grieving the loss of his friend, George Floyd, who he called twin. And this is what Stephen wrote on IG in response to a message that he received. It's not about nothing else but what's wrong, what's right. Wrong is wrong, and I'm glad the world knows I'm standing for unity and us all. And I'm standing for my twin, my kids, your kids, and your kids' kids. Love to all who have love for all, which is how he signs a lot of his IGs. You know, in his playing career, he was always known as the ultimate teammate, from San Antonio to Indiana to the Bay Area. And now the qualities that made him the ultimate teammate, leadership, passion, sacrifice, and loyalty, are all on display for the world to see. Here's another quote from Stephen. It's time for us to stand together, and I need you all to stand with me and to stand with me in the right way. So I wanted to say thank you to Stack. He's honored his friend. He has been a personal inspiration and inspiration to this entire country, and he continues to be the ultimate teammate, Nick.
I echo that 1,000%, Wilds, and I really appreciate you sharing that with the audience. A lot of our sports leagues, a lot of our companies, a lot of our brands released statements this weekend, and there were two things that were eerily missing from the vast majority of them: police brutality and white people. And so that's what I'm gonna spend my time talking about. We're gonna start with police brutality, because it is, words matter and movements matter. And it is important not to put a nebulous label of systemic racism or injustice on the movement that we're in right now, the movement that Colin Kaepernick was a part of when he was taking a knee. It was not systemic racism that killed George Floyd. It was an officer's knee to his neck for 9 minutes that killed George Floyd. It was police brutality that killed George Floyd, and those words matter. And it is important that we call out what it is and we call out what we are all seeing. We all saw on live television over the last 96 hours, at every nook and cranny of the country, we saw good actions by some police forces, as Brian mentioned, and we also saw an old man waiting for the bus in Salt Lake City get shoved to the ground. We saw a young college couple on their way home from a date get tased and beat up on camera for no reason other than the officers thought they could. We saw in Minneapolis people standing on their front porch on a vacant street be tear gassed about 12 hours after we saw a CNN reporter be arrested on scene for trying to comply with what the officers were saying. That is police brutality, and that is what has brought us to this moment. And I understand the easy thing to say is the old "a few bad apples" cliche. And to steal a line from the wise man Chris Rock, or to paraphrase him, we got to start treating our cops a lot more like we treat our airline pilots. Can't have bad apples. And the ones that we do have must be rooted out immediately, instead of, as it would appear to be the case and has been the case for far too long, protected. We must find a way to incentivize the good cops to be able to tell on the bad cops instead of furthering this thin blue line of silence that has not only gotten us to this point, but gotten certain bad apples in certain police forces to a sense of feeling so much impunity that knowing they're on camera, they will shoot rubber bullets at people standing away holding up signs, or tear gas the press, or knowing they're on camera, stay kneeling on a man's neck for the better part of 10 minutes while he begs for his life. So that's the police brutality part of it. And now to the white people part of it. Listen to my fellow white people. For as long as we have been a country, black people have begged us to listen, that they are treated a different way by the police. And for the better part of 400 years, or since black folks have pseudo had their freedom the last 160 years, for the better part of the last 150, we've ignored them because there wasn't proof, there wasn't evidence. And then every single American got one of these. And we saw not only were our black brothers and sisters not lying to us, they hadn't even expressed quite how bad it was. And shamefully and embarrassingly, in large part, our response, instead of apologizing, asking for forgiveness, and asking how we can be a better part of the solution, our response as the people in power, the majority as white people, was to move the goalposts or to muddy the waters. Well, what did you do? Why didn't you comply? Well, what was going on before the video started? And it is always the responsibility of those in power to affect change. If we want policing in this country to change, we as white people have to be at the forefront of this movement, because we know they can. Because we saw just a month ago, when in large part white people in certain states were upset because damn tanning salons and barbershops weren't open, and when they stormed state capitals armed to the teeth, we saw the police in that instance show immense restraint, great restraint, and the restraint that every American deserves to be shown by the police under the protections of the Constitution. So we know it's possible, and we must demand the same for all Americans. And I beg of you, for all of us white people, to stop acting like there is a way for black people to demand their full rights as American citizens that will be accepted by the majority. Take a knee in silent protest, become one of the most hated men in America, and lose your career. Throw a fist up at the Olympics, become two of the most hated men in America, and lose your career. Be the greatest man America has ever produced, lead a nonviolent movement to change the world. Be killed on a balcony in Memphis before you hit age 40. And speaking of Martin Luther King, one other thing to my fellow white people. I understand for many of us, last thing we learned about MLK was in junior high school, Black History Month, and I Have a Dream speech. Please quit quoting the same two or three lines from that speech as if that is all that man was. If you would like a Martin Luther King quote, I've got one. It actually came while he was in jail for, oddly enough, peacefully protesting. The quote was about who the biggest stumbling block to black people's freedom and rights are in this country. And he said it was not the open racist. It was not the Ku Klux Klan. It was white people who are, quote, more devoted to order than to justice, who prefer a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods of direct action. That sound eerily familiar to anybody right now? So listen, folks, it's time we got to pick a side. And the side isn't black or white. The side is right or wrong. And if you want to be on the right side of not only this, but of history, if you are in a position of power or influence, or you are in the majority, then you must not do it simply through a few fist emojis and Instagram likes. You must put your money, your power, your influence, your platform where your mouth is. Or else, you can set your watch to it. We're going to be right back here sooner than we think, talking about the exact same issues that brought us to this precipice this weekend, Jenna.
Powerful and heartfelt and important words, Nick. Thank you so much. Thanks to all three of you. It's such a tough transition, but we are going to take a turn and try to talk some sports on the other side. We'll have much more First Things First right after this.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Back here with Brian Westbrook, and we are drawing a blank, gentlemen. We are now into June, and free agent quarterback Cam Newton still doesn't have a team to call home. Sources are now saying with the market cool, Cam may just wait to sign with a team. What's the rush? Also, phones not ringing. Nick, Cam's week one status is blank.
Right now, I think his week one status is doubtful because I think Cam is smartly going to try to wait for a spot to be a starting quarterback, as he obviously should be. And you don't typically have season-ending or major injuries to starting quarterbacks in the preseason. You almost always have them, unfortunately, within the first few weeks of the season. So especially with included in this report was the fact that the Patriots talked to him a couple months ago and didn't show a lot of interest. They're clearly the team that has the biggest need at quarterback right now. Sorry, Wilds. And so if they're not going to sign him, then he's going to have to wait for an injury, which means he's going to have to wait past week one, Brian.
You know, I think his week one status is basically going to be a backup. I think Cam will realize that, of course, the market has cooled. And in order for him to build that confidence in himself that he's coming off the injury healthy enough for the teams to accept him as a backup quarterback and a guy that can run their system if they need to, he's going to have to get into camp. And just like you mentioned, it's hard to say that your starting quarterback won't be ready for week one. And so as he's in camp and as he builds that confidence over the weeks, if he gets to week five or six and has to play for 4 or 5 weeks like Teddy Bridgewater did this past year, then he has that ability. He has already built up that equity with the team. So to me, it makes sense for him to go in as a backup for week one, at least if he can't be a starter.
Jenna, I went with Photoshop worthy here because I think that Cam is basically available to all the teams, and I could see some people in the graphic design department be like, hey, just so we have it ready, Why don't you mock up a Photoshop of Cam in a whatever jersey? And Nick, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, that sometimes the headline is not in the headline. League sources believe Newton and the Patriots talked early during his free agency, but nothing materialized. That wasn't the headline of the story, and that hasn't been reported to my knowledge, because I've read every single Cam Newton Patriots piece of literature that has come out for the last 3 months, and that just popped up. So the fact that that is, there's a little spark there, Jenna, like your favorite movie, Castaway, little spark there that might turn into something.
I know I haven't seen it yet. I'm definitely watching Castaway this week. It's on my must-see this week. Moving on, Miami Dolphins rookie Tua Tagovailoa is reportedly expected to beat out veteran Ryan Fitzpatrick as the team's week one starter. I believe the words foregone conclusion are what we are looking for here. Nick, the Dolphins choosing to start Tua week one would be blank.
The obvious choice. Like, if he's healthy, he plays. He's a blue chip prospect who had one of the greatest pre-injury college careers statistically we've ever seen. And the guy in front of him is most famous for his facial hair and his alma mater before we get to his ability on the football field, and averages a pick a game for his career. Like, obviously you're going to go with Tua. And for Fitzpatrick, I think it would be great if the last game he ever started in the NFL was week 17 against the Patriots, stealing that bye from them and opening up the door to the Chiefs starting their soon-to-be dynasty. It would be a wonderful football legacy for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I don't want it to be marred by him starting a couple games for the Dolphins this year, Brian.
You know, it reminded me of Herm Edwards' quote, "You play to win the game." And that's what every coach is thinking about. That's what certainly what Brian Flores is thinking about. If Tua is healthy and you can protect him, of course, you put your best player on the field. I watched that Dolphins team, and just like you mentioned, they played all season long, hard on the line every single game. And you mentioned that last game against the Patriots. Sorry about that, Kevin. But that Dolphins team wants to win right now. Brian Flores wants to win now. And Kevin, if you don't have Tua in there starting, I'm not sure that Ryan Fitzpatrick is the answer.
Well, if you play to win the game, I don't know if Tua is the answer either. I wrote, "I see ghosts," after the famous Sam Darnold versus the Patriots quote, because if you start Tua, Belichick is 12-0 against rookie quarterbacks. So you can start him week one. It's September 13th. And if you want to play to win the game, if maybe he goes 12-1, maybe Tua breaks the trend. But I would expect 13-0 come September 13th, Jenna.
All right, moving on to the aforementioned Patriots. So they've got Jarrett Stidham penciled in as their week one starter, but Dan Graziano brought up an interesting point saying, quote, "If Stidham doesn't work out, he'll cost the Patriots close to nothing." I would add maybe just an "I told you so" from Nick, but I'm sure he'd be subtle about it because that's how he works. Nick, the Patriots' commitment to Stidham is blank.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to talk about something I know very, very little about, and I don't like to do that. But the Patriots' commitment to Stidham is tender-ish. Now, listen, I've been with my wife since W was president, so our relationship predates the apps. But we have a lot of young bachelors that work on this television show. And they certainly were almost all single when the show first started. And I talk to them Fridays after the show, be like, "What's going on?" They're like, "Oh, got a date." Then I talk to them the next week, Friday, and they're like, "Oh, got a date with somebody else." Like, what the hell's going on here? They're like, "Ah, we met on Tinder, we matched, it didn't work out." So the way I understood it was so easy to find dates and find matches. If you didn't like it, you could just easily move on. Swipe right, left, up, whatever it was, and they kept moving on. By the way, I do think a couple of those guys ended up finding their soon-to-be wives on Tinder, so good for them. But it's not the point. The point is this. While it doesn't mean you're not going to find your long-term commitment, you're not tied to it. You have no investment. It's been a few days. They spent a low and mid-round draft pick. So if he's no good, you can swipe left and move on to Brian Hoyer, and then swipe left and move on, you would hope, to Sunshine, but he's not going to be there. So probably whomever the next guy is. So I say it's tenderish, Brian Westbrook. I hope that made sense.
I didn't know how you were going to get Tinder in here this morning, but I'm glad that you did a great job of explaining it. To me, it's GOAT-level commitment. I mean, just think about it. You just got rid of the best quarterback in the history of the game, and you replace him with a guy that really hasn't played very much in the NFL in Jarrett Stidham, and a journeyman in Brian Hoyer. You had an opportunity to go out and get guys like Cam or even Andy Dalton. But you say, you know what? I'm going to stick with Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham. To me, that's GOAT-level commitment. They're committed to Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham for some reason that I haven't quite figured out.
I went with $675,000, literally. That's literally the answer. And I know in the show a lot we talk about QB cap number and can you win with a big QB cap number. Mahomes going to have a huge cap number. You know, Dak's number is going to be pretty big. We talk about Jared Goff's number is huge. We ran the numbers on Jared the Javelin, 0.41% of the cap. So there we go. That's a good debate. Can you win a Super Bowl if your quarterback takes up less than a half of 1% of the cap?
Guys, I have to kindly disagree with all of you. Belichick put his heart and soul into Stidham. He could have gone out to get anybody else. He's saying Stidham's my guy. There will be an enormous amount of pride lost. I know Belichick doesn't care about pride. What, Wilds?
He does not have a heart nor a soul. Just all football all the time. Just one.
and therein lies why I am incorrect. All right, guys, we got to take a break. Coming up, the NBA took a major step towards restarting the season. That is next. This is First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Broussard. Bunch of NBA headlines to get through this morning. Let us run a little fast break. First up, here we go. The NBA Board of Governors is expected to approve a restart plan on Thursday with growing support for a plan with 22 teams, including regular season and play-in games. Shams Charania tweeted out the four restart scenarios on Friday. There's a 16-team option that would go straight to the playoffs, a 20-team group stage format, a 22-team option with games to determine seeding and a play-in tournament for final seeds, and finally a 30-team, 72-game regular season with a play-in tournament. Don't feel bad if you don't understand all of these in its entirety. Neither do I. Let's go around the panel here. Nick, which of these options would you vote for, though, and why?
All right, the first option is obviously the right option. Listen, the NBA's priority, first of all, should be making as sure as you can that the season doesn't have to stop again. That means inviting the fewest teams possible. The second priority for them should be making sure it's as fair as possible to the teams that through 65 games have been good. And the third and lowest priority, but still should be slightly a priority, is to make sure the teams that have been the best teams in basketball are not somehow put at a disadvantage compared to the teams that have been mediocre. There is one option that achieves all three of those. It is the 16 teams. You can have warm-up games to get ready for the playoffs. You have the fewest people there. You reward the teams that got themselves into the playoffs through 65 games. And you don't penalize the Bucks or the Lakers or the Clippers or the Raptors by having them have to play some red-hot team that just won a tournament. It checks all the boxes. It maybe won't rate the highest, but color me crazy, I think it's going to rate like crazy because we got folks out here watching Madden on television and people haven't watched soccer in years or watching German soccer right now because you want sports back so badly. So that's what I would go with, Wilds. Option one.
Okay. For me, if it's just a pure enthusiasm, Broussard, I'm going with a little bit of regular season. And then we get to the group stage, and then we get the Elam endings, and then we reseed. But unfortunately, it's not just about enthusiasm. I think the other big thing we have to worry about, and Damian Lillard mentioned it on Jalen Jacoby, health of the players, not just from coronavirus and risk, but also just getting ramped up for the playoffs. And I think Damian said they need those games to get ready. And I know we think like, hey, let's just charge into the playoffs. But I'm going to take, I believe Damian Lillard, I think we've got to slowly ramp up. And maybe it's not fair to have all these teams in, but I think we got to start up with the regular season. And as a byproduct, we also just get a lot of excitement and enthusiasm, Broussard.
Thank you, Wilds. Nick, I am coloring you crazy. What are you talking about? There is no way you can go right into the playoffs. What, they've been off 3-4 months? The increase for injury, I mean, injuries could happen easily if you put these guys right into the playoffs. Also, the playoffs are your most important games of the season. You want the players to be at a high level. If you throw them right in, the chemistry is going to be bad. The camaraderie on the court is going to be bad. the quality of play will be horrible. And you said that you can have them play some exhibition games amongst themselves to get ready. No playoff teams are going to go hard against one another if they know they could meet them down the road in the playoffs. So those would just be exhibitions that guys are going half-heartedly through. You need option three. The 22 teams play about 8 regular season games per team to get yourself in shape, to decrease the chances of injury, to improve the chemistry and the quality of play. And then you have the play-in and you get going that way. It's simple.
Okay, except Broussard, you easily could alleviate the concern you have of teams worrying, oh, I don't want to go hard against you because we might face in the postseason. The top 3 seeds in the West play their 6 warm-up games against the bottom 3 seeds in the East, and so on and so forth. It's all cross-conference. It's all 1 versus 8, 1 versus 7, so on and so forth. So the odds of it being a finals matchup are infinitesimal. And this idea of, well, they won't try if it's an exhibition, for the 2 best teams in basketball, the 2 teams with the best Vegas odds, the Lakers and the Bucks, these would all be exhibitions anyway, because they've already locked up the 1 seed, whether you play an extra 6 or 8 games or not. So this idea, what people want is to try to pigeonhole Zion into the postseason and to shake the snow globe. Broussard, we should just admit that and say this isn't about fairness or what's right or what is actually most important, which is the fewest teams possible in the bubble, so the least likelihood somebody gets sick and we have to shut this whole thing down, Chris.
I don't see teams playing hard in things that are determined exhibition games. They have to be real regular season games. You're right, obviously in the long run they wouldn't matter, but they're still regular season games, and I think that's important. I don't think Zion is being overrated in this whole play-in thing. Yeah, it'd be nice because he's a draw if he made the playoffs, but that's not the main reason the NBA is doing this. They're doing this to create excitement and give more teams a shot after being off for 3 or 4 months.
All right, to be discussed as we move on here. Talks in Boston Celtics. A recent report says Jason Tatum will most likely get a max contract from Boston after the season. Nick, you think Tatum eventually carries the Celtics to a title?
Carries the Celtics? No. The best player on a title team? No. And that's why the Celtics are in a tough spot. Because you obviously have to give Tatum the max contract for the guys the draft class before him, like Ben Simmons, that was 5 years, 170. But that does mean you've got your big 3 in Boston. Tatum, Kimba, and Brown. All locked up long term, all at maxes or near maxes. And Tatum, Kimba, and Brown is absolutely the second best, third best, and fourth best player on a championship team, on a great team. The problem is, I don't see Tatum jumping 2 tiers. Remember my awesome tiers that everybody loved and nobody disagreed with? He would have to jump 2 tiers. He wouldn't just have to get up to the Russ tier, because nobody on that Russ tier is good enough to be the best player on a title team. He would have to get up to the LeBron tier. I don't see that happening. They would need a guy like, Anthony Davis or, Kawhi Leonard, who they could have traded Jalen Brown for, but they decided not to because Danny Ainge loves those beloved assets. So, no, you got to pay him the money. But I think that Wilds, this gets you stuck in the low 50s win conference finalist tier, new tier, playoff tier, instead of NBA champion tier. Go ahead, Wilds.
Yeah, I think it gets him stuck for start with his number raised to the rafters in 25 years. The guy's 22 years old. Of course he's going to get a max contract, and the best is yet to come. We spend so much time. Luka is so young. How good is Luka going to get? Luka is who knows the ceiling for Luka? Tatum, he's 13 months younger than Tatum. What is that? Like, the ceiling for Jason Tatum is also infinitesimal. The ceiling is the roof, and the roof is where the banner goes when they raise another championship in Boston, courtesy of Jason Tatum, Broussard.
Yeah, Nick, how in the world Zion is a tier above Jason Tatum? That is ridiculous.
Oh,
after what, 19 games or something like that? Okay, look, Jason Tatum can be the best player on a championship team in the right situation. I would agree. Do I think he can lead a team to a title? I would say no, but that's semantics because there are only three players that have proven they can lead a team to a title. LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, and Steph Curry. I don't think Kevin Durant's even proven it yet. When he had his own team, he couldn't lead them to a championship. He just was the best player on a championship team. There's a difference. Some might think it's a semantics, but there is a difference. And I think Jason Tatum in the right situation can be the best player on the championship team. And I think Boston is building the right situation with Kimba, with Jaylen Brown, with Gordon Hayward, and with a very good coach in Brad Stevens. They look like they could eventually be that team where, yeah, they don't have that LeBron James type superstar, but they've got a great player in Tatum and some really good players, and they're a great team that could win a championship.
Yeah, all right, let's move on to New York now, where Tom Thibodeau is reportedly the heavy favorite to be the Knicks' next head coach. Tibbs spent seven seasons as an assistant coach for the Knicks back in the day. Nick, what do you think? You like this fit?
I don't know. Because, listen, Tibbs, I think, really, really knows basketball. Tibbs has a relationships issue, and I'm not sure it's been resolved. I do know this. The Knicks cannot afford to be having this story come out about their next head coach again anytime in the next 5 years. Whoever they hire, if it is Thibodeau, they've got to be committed. In the last 5 years, the Knicks have had Derek Fisher, Kurt Rambis, Jeff Hornacek, David Fizdale, and Mike Miller. And not even the Mike Miller who hit six threes in the finals and has a pet monkey, the cool Mike Miller. Different Mike Miller that you guys didn't even know was the head coach of the Knicks until I just said it. So whomever it is, they have to be committed to long term.
He's right.
And I just feel like Tibbs has a bit of a, not culture gap, a generation gap with today's athletes and how hard they want to practice, how often they want to practice. And I think that has worked against him at his stops in Chicago and in Minnesota Wilds.
Well, I think that if they would be committed to Tibbs, if they're committed to Leon Rose, you know, it's a CAA pipeline from Leon Rose to Tibbs. And then I hope, although Broussard, earlier before this segment started, you were pouring cold water on my Chris Paul to New York idea. But once I get onto the CAA basketball website and I start photoshopping players with Knicks uniforms on, I start to get very excited. But do you feel like I'm too excited for the CAA pipeline directly into Madison Square Garden?
Yes, you are way too excited. You need to be cooled down. All right, look.
Darn it.
Tibbs, Nick actually made some decent points. But Nick, don't forget, in his second year in Minnesota, Tibbs won 47 games. And so, and that was in the West, and they made the playoffs. It went south the third year when he got fired. But Jimmy Butler, you know, there were all types of issues there. I also think Tibbs will be good as just the coach. Just like we saw with Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers was not good when he was the president and the coach with the Clippers. Now he's just the coach, and he's been tremendous. I think the same will be true of Tibbs. President and coach in Minnesota, too much for him. In New York, he's strictly the coach. He will do a good job.
Hey, what's up? It's Brian Westbrook, and I wanted to accept the all-in challenge from my good friend, Michael Rubin. Thank you so much for challenging me here. I, in order to get it to here, get to this place where I'm at, I've had an awful lot of help from when I was a young man until I was in college, until I was in a professional level. And even now, as I go through my day to day, I'm still continuously helped by so many people. And I wanted to take this opportunity to give back and help some others. So here I am. What we're offering is pretty simple. First, we're going to have a great dinner at Del Frisco Saturday night before the football game with myself and some of my Eagles alumni friends. Sunday morning, we'll wake up early and you'll accompany to my pregame show on 97.5 The Fanatic. We'll talk some football. We'll even have you on for a segment. Then we'll drive over to the stadium and enjoy the Eagles. Beat up on somebody. You pick the game. We'll beat up on someone and you'll watch a game with myself in the suite with some of my good friends. Hopefully, that will be a great time for anyone involved. This is about the NFL. This is about giving back. This is about challenging and helping so many people.
Back here, First Things First, look who we're joined by, our all-in challenge all-star Brian Westbrook. Brian, when you said you guys would wake up Sunday morning, and I thought for sure it was come work out with me, let's sweat together. Then we'd go to a game. I hope that's included. Then I'll bid on it. How excited are you?
They're trying to raise money.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right,
I'm excited. Okay. I'm not excited at all about working out with you. I saw some videos over the weekend of you working out and your hands were going all crazy.
I know. You had a problem with my hands.
You look like you were doing a great job. But this all-in challenge, it's all about helping people. It's all about giving back. You know, so many people are affected by COVID-19. You know, so many people are hungry, the kids, the elderly, so many of the workers that work endless hours, 12, 14, 16, 18 hours a day. They need to be fed. We just wanted to give back and try to help some people out. And that's what this is all about. The All-In Challenge. My good friend Michael Rubin mentioned it to me, and I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to give the Eagles fan an opportunity to come to the game and enjoy it. And I wanted to add one thing. My good friend Dennis Zatlin and the Allied Resources added in, if the winner wanted to bring any of their family or friends, he will offer his tickets, his on-field tickets. You can watch the players come out of the tunnel, be right there on the field. He wanted to offer that as well as part of the challenge. I'm so excited to be a part of it.
There's so many athletes who are taking part in the All-In Challenge. It's so great that you're doing that, Bri. Love that you shared that with us. All right, time for some stories to start your morning out. Dak Prescott is reportedly prepared to drag contract talks out until the July 15th franchise tag deadline. So, like Groundhog Day, we get 6 more weeks of Dak talk. Nick, does this have the potential to get ugly?
Well, ugly, I guess, in the eye of the beholder. It's certainly going to take a very long time. And by the way, while we're talking All-In Challenge, we should give Dak Prescott credit. He's also participating in the All-In Challenge. If you bid right now, you can win the opportunity to, on Dak's behalf, reject whatever the next Cowboys offer is. So that seems pretty cool if somebody wants to participate in that. But yeah, I don't think this gets done prior to the second week of July at the earliest. I think deadlines typically make deals. Dak has been very strong and resolute in his position. He's going to be one of the highest paid players in the history of football. We'll see if he takes it all the way to the deadline. I said the other day, Wilds, that before July 11th, no chance. In those last 96 hours, maybe. But, I mean, that's where this has been headed, it would appear, for the last year and a half, Kevin.
Yeah, I know it's semantics, but Dak is not necessarily dragging. If you give Dak what he wants, it'll probably be over. He's going to be one of the highest paid football players of all time. And guess what? At the end of the deal, you're going to look back and be like, wow, what a bargain Dak Prescott is. He's such a value to the team, Brian.
Kevin, I absolutely agree with you about the end part. At the end of this thing, after the fifth year, they're going to say this was a value, because when you think about it, you still have to get Deshaun Watson paid, the Patrick Mahomes will be paid. And in 5 years, close to $40, $45 million would be the going rate of quarterbacks. To me, this deal is all about that fifth year for Dak. That's why he doesn't want to sign it. And look at it. Deadlines are when things get done. The Cowboys made Dak play throughout his entire rookie contract without giving him a deal. Of course, I would make them wait till July 15th as well.
All right, let's move on to Green Bay now, where the Packers are reportedly a lock to find a use for Jordan Love on offense this season, at least in special package scenarios. I guess trading up in the first round to draft a quarterback means you might want to actually use that quarterback at some point. Nick, would this be a mistake by the Green Bay Packers?
Oh, it'd be a huge mistake, and it'd be such a mistake, I don't want to believe this report. Jordan Love ain't Jalen Hurts now. I mean, he's got a little wiggle to him, but this isn't some dual threat quarterback. You drafted him because of what he does with his arm. So if you're getting him on the field, it would be to use his arm, which means unless Aaron Rodgers is incapacitated, you would be saying, Aaron, we'd rather not use you this play. We want to use Jordan. That would be insanity. So he's not Taysom Hill or Jalen Hurts. He's none of these guys. He's just a quarterback, run a very little bit. So no, I can't imagine this actually happens. And if it is, if it's like we're going to split snaps, then this would have to be Rodgers' last year in Green Bay, no matter what the contract situation is, Wilds.
I agree. When they drafted him and everyone was freaking out, it was like, everybody relax. Green Bay doesn't want Jordan Love to take one snap the whole year. And then fast forward a month, like, hey, by the way, he's going to be on the field a lot. We got all sorts of special plays. Been talking to Sean Payton. We got this gadget play. I don't even know what they're doing with Jalen Hurts, but we're going to probably do something like that. So, Brian, I was shocked. it's weird, but a part of me also is like kind of interested in it. I kind of like the two quarterbacks on the field thing at the same time.
Just imagine if you're Aaron Rodgers. They're talking about, I'm one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game, and they're talking about trying to get a rookie on the field for a two quarterback in the game type of situation. This is crazy. Why are the Packers even leaking these types of things? Are they trying to make Aaron Rodgers upset before the season even starts? This is madness. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. You leave that guy on the field. The advantage is having Aaron Rodgers on the field, not a rookie coming out of college trying to figure out what's going on in the NFL.
It's lunacy. I agree. All right, on to the Baltimore Ravens now, where head coach John Harbaugh had this to say. Going into our season last year, we were the iceberg. 90% of what we were going to be capable of was still underwater. People hadn't seen it yet. Starting next year, we're not going to be the iceberg. People are going to see us. We're going to be everybody's most important game. Nick, you agree with Harbaugh?
Oh, up until that last sentence. We're going to be everybody's most important game. My bad, John Harbaugh. And I like John Harbaugh a lot. And I've said he's one of the most underrated coaches in NFL history because he's got one Super Bowl, or in the modern NFL with the one Super Bowl. I didn't know he had two. He evidently won last year. I would have thought the most anticipated game would be against the Super Bowl champions, but I missed it. I thought they flamed out in their first playoff game, but evidently they won the championship, so they're everyone's most important game. Congrats to the Ravens. I'm late on this one. Two-time Super Bowl champ John Harbaugh. Good for him. Congrats to Lamar. He won a Super Bowl his first year as a starter. Hell of a year by him. Must have won Super Bowl MVP as well. Good for them. I'm super excited for the Ravens. I had no idea. Makes me excited. Wilds, week three, my Chiefs get to face the defending Super Bowl champs. How about that? Circle that game on my calendar. Excited for it.
You know what he means. You know what he means. Brian, he's true here. He's right here. It is. You know what I actually think it is interesting? September 13th, Browns, Ravens, like right away. I think Baker said it. Like, boom, let's go. Ravens right away. I think that's it's not a make or break game, but I think we'll learn a lot from the Browns week one when we see how they play against the, as Nick calls them, the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens.
Nick, you sound like Michael Jordan in your last statement. You're trying to find a slight in everything. It always has to come back to you and the Chiefs. You know what? That was a great statement by John Harbaugh. First of all, it's true. And maybe the last sentence may be a bit of a stretch, but when you're talking about one of the best players in the league and Lamar Jackson, you definitely have to mention you're a game to be checked off on everyone's schedule. And listen, yeah, you may be splitting her hairs. It may not be the game that you're looking forward to because they're the best team in the league. They may not have won the Super Bowl, but you're definitely marking off having to try to find a way to circle Lamar Jackson because that's a week that defenders have to be concerned about.
All right, let's finish up this morning with some boxing. 53-year-old Mike Tyson, 57-year-old Evander Holyfield, both mounting comebacks. Impact Boxing promoters have proposed a veteran boxing league. It's like the Golden Girls, only much different. Nick, something you want? You want to see this?
I want Tyson back. I don't know about all the rest. Like when Michael Jordan came back to the Wizards, it didn't mean all the guys from the 90s should unretire. Just Jordan. And Tyson, you do it. Evander, maybe fall back a bit, bruh. I don't know about that, Jenna.
It's great. We gotta go. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone. Stay safe.